A Scrap of Silver in My Pocket by Sweater Vest, read by Cookie Mom, 6067. Tony Stark slouches on a sofa in his enormous penthouse, staring out over the festive lights of New York City. It had been another wildly successful year, his net worth fattening like a Christmas turkey. He scowls into his rapidly depleting whiskey glass at the metaphor, Christmas. Humbug. He hates being alone this time of year, his entire staff on vacation. That was Pepper's doing. The first year he'd griped, sneering at the festive holiday branches staked around Stark Industries. Pepper, steely-eyed and unintimidated, reasons he'd hired her, as it were, had told him firmly, "You can keep Christmas in your own way, Tony. But the fact is, you can't force Stark Industries employees to do the same without an enormous turnover and lawsuits." And like that, all Stark Industries employees had 2 weeks paid vacation over the winter holidays. Pepper had been right about morale, Tony admitted grudgingly. It hadn't always been like this. He hadn't always been like this. Maria Stark had loved the holiday season, transforming the now vacant and locked-up mansion into a wonderland. Then his father had driven them both into a tree one Christmas Eve, and slowly each person Tony had trusted turned out to have been using him. Even Obi, though it had taken over a decade to figure that out. Tony's hands are shaking. Obi died 3 years back, and yet an hour ago, he'd stood in this room, pale and melancholy-eyed. Tony had done the only thing he could think of, poured them both a drink. Obi took his, but did not drink from it. "It's required of every man, my boy," Obi had said, his voice echoing and distant, "that he walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. If he does not in life, well, that task waits for him after death. Traveling the whole time. No rest, no peace. That's why I'm here." "To make amends?" Tony had asked, that familiar anger coursing through him. "A warning of what faces you, Tony, if you don't change." "Well, it certainly took you long enough," Tony snapped. "Seems like you could have covered a lot of ground in 3 years." Obi glared at him but said on, "Hear me. My time is nearly gone." Tony waved an impatient hand. "I'm here to warn you that you still have a chance to escape my fate. You'll be haunted by three spirits, without whose visits you can't hope to change." "Oh? Which greedy son of a bitch from my past will it be this time?" "Expect the first tonight at 1 a.m. "That's not an answer." Obi had faded with a sneer. If there were not still a tumbler on the table with a smudged fingerprint on it, Tony would have thought he'd discovered some old pills in the back of a cabinet. He checks his watch. The time clicks over to 1 a.m. Tony sits up. There's music coming from the other room. Glenn Miller, he realizes. Moonlight Serenade. Tony follows the sound. He almost never uses the record player, but there it is, playing one of the Glenn Miller albums he inherited. Tony puts his glass down hard and pulls the needle away from the record, cutting the song off with an unpleasant scratch. "I like that song," says a voice behind him. Tony whirls around, hard in his throat. The spirit is hot, Tony realizes. He's about 30, obese size and obviously muscular, even under the worn-in flannel shirt and jeans. There's something non-threatening about him. His posture is relaxed, leaning away from Tony. "Jaw that could cut rocks, though." "Hi," the spirit says. "I'm the spirit of Christmas past." "Tony," Tony says. "Christmas past, huh? Like my past? That's the idea." Tony leans back against a shelf, giving the spirit a leisurely once-over. "I think I'd remember if you were in my past." Then the spirit blushes. Interesting, Tony decides. That's not how it works. Okay, how does it work, Hot Stuff? This is serious, you know, the spirit says, looking flustered. This is about your welfare. I can think of other things more conducive to my welfare, Tony purrs. The spirit clears his throat. Your reclamation, then. I like the sound of that, Tony replies, and pushes off the shelf, strolling towards the spirit. Take heed, the spirit continues, holding out his hand. Walk with me. Tony doesn't need to be told twice. He grips the spirit's hand, then presses into his space. I must have been very good this year. No, the spirit manages, blushing again. You weren't. That's why I'm here. Not much of an incentive to behave better, Tony observes. I'm beginning to see that, the spirit replies wryly. What's your name? And don't tell me the spirit of Christmas past, that's clearly your job title. If I tell you, will you go into the past with me? Seems more like a third date topic, but sure. I don't think you're listening to me. I am, Tony assures. Tell me more about your past. It's your past. Right, yes, I knew that. Tell me more about my past. Maybe we can also talk about our future, Tony says with a grin. And you know, it would probably help me forge a stronger connection and identify with it all if you told me your name. The spirit sighs again, eyes briefly rolling upward. Steve. Steve. Is that a problem? It's not very mystical, is it? Or old-fashioned? I expected... Tony trails off and thinks, Fagin or Ebenezer, David, Nicholas, Havisham, if we're not on a first name basis, maybe. Steve puts one of his lovely warm palms on Tony's heart, and Tony thinks this means they're making a connection. Then the penthouse winks away, and they're standing on a sidewalk on a cool, crisp day. Oh, fuck, Tony says. Do you know where we are? Do I know? Tony snorts. Just grew up in that mansion that takes up the whole block. They walk up the winding front walk and steps. Tony hesitates and reaches for the door handle. His hand passes through. He glances over his shoulder at Steve. These are just shadows of your past, Tony. We're only here to observe, Steve says gently. Tony nods once and walks through the door, Steve behind him. He steeled himself for what would be on the other side, but it's still a gut punch. The mansion is decked out in full holiday cheer, real holly and juniper wreath the entry. There are warm glowing lights shaped like snowflakes suspended from the high ceilings. Through a doorway, Tony can see the enormous fir his father always hauled in for his mother to decorate. She's there now, he sees. At the tree. There's a lump in his throat. Tony struggles for breath. Tony? Steve asks quietly, a warm presence at Tony's side. Sorry, I just... Tony takes a deep breath. You never get used to it, you know? How grief can knock the wind out of you. No, you don't. The way Steve says it suggests he's got more experience with that than his apparent age lets on. Tony looks at him curiously, but Steve just smiles. He ducks his head, hands stuffed in his pockets. Show me around, he asks, almost shyly. Tony feels a genuine smile on his face. Sure. Showing Steve around is wonderful. He listens intently to the stories Tony tells, laughs at his jokes, and asks questions about Tony, his mother, and their traditions. Tony realizes it's been a really long time since someone met him on equal footing, saw him as a person they were interested in, not as Tony Stark, genius billionaire playboy. He asked Steve about himself, too. Steve studied art, did a few tours in the army, and now works in art therapy. My friend Sam gave me the idea, Steve tells Tony, it helps to feel like I'm doing something, making a difference. Doesn't it hurt more to keep picking at old wounds? Steve stops walking. They're outside now, doing a lap around the mansion. Steve studies Tony's face. Tony tries not to squirm or fill the silence with more rambling that will reveal more than he'd like about himself. Sometimes, Steve says eventually. He says it slowly, like he's weighing each syllable carefully. But that's how you figure things out, and hopefully you can find a new way forward, a changed nature, another hope as a great end. He smiles. At least to me, that always seemed like the thing to do. Pick yourself back up, wipe the blood off your face, and keep going. Wipe the blood off your face? Tony repeats. Steve laughs. All right, I might have had a too big mouth when I was younger. Got in a lot of scrapes. That was before. And he motions at himself. I was sick for a long time. My ma couldn't afford to get me to a specialist, and our doctor wasn't. He didn't care much, I guess. That's terrible. Steve shrugs. I made it. Not everyone does. But I did, and now I try to help anyone else who gets left behind, standing up for the little guy, you know? Tony blinks. As the spirit of Christmas passed? No, as the... Steve stops, his brow furrowed. Christmas passed. Yeah, that must be it. He grins at Tony, and Tony, who knows he ought to hold on to this suspicion, can't help but let it drift off. Hey, thanks for listening, Tony. A lot of people just see how I look and don't bother with the rest. Tony smiles tightly. I know what you mean. Their parting is abrupt. Tony turns around for a moment, and then he's back in his penthouse. His chest aches, thinking of how warm he felt in Steve's presence. The only person who has cared for him in a long time, with no ulterior motive. No, Tony thinks, that's not right. There's Pepper, and Happy. Sure, they work for him, but they're honest with him in a way that feels empathetic. And Rhodey, though Tony hardly sees him now that he's taken a special assignment. Before Tony can investigate further, the second spirit arrives. He's good-natured and also a muscular blonde, so Tony briefly wonders what his subconscious is trying to tell him before the spirit booms, "Let us feast!" And he's whisked away into the present. The spirit of Christmas yet to come is also hot, but scary hot, her red hair braided over her shoulder and a stern look on her face. She'd probably like Pepper, Tony decides. She also stabs him in the neck, and that's when Tony wakes up. Pepper arrives late in the afternoon on Christmas Day, obviously concerned she hasn't heard from Tony. Tony can't blame her. He doesn't know when he last went 36 hours without needing rescuing from the consequences of his own actions. Sorry, Pep, he says. I was busy reviewing our charitable giving structure. We don't have one of those, Pepper says, eyeing him suspiciously. I brought it up when you initially hired me, but you dismissed the idea. I was wrong, Tony replies. For next year, I'm sorry, I must have had more eggnog than I thought. You're what? Wrong, Tony repeats. I was wrong. Would it help if I added, you were right? You were right. You're always right, Pepper. I don't pay you enough. Oh, by the way, I sent your Christmas bonus as a direct deposit. Pepper pulls her phone out. After a minute, she grabs the counter for support. Tony, this is... How many zeros is that? A great many back bonuses are included, I assure you, Tony replies with a grin. Are you dying? Is that what this is? Final rites? I've never felt more alive, Tony proclaims with glee. I finally get it. Peace on earth, goodwill towards men, and all that jazz. Hey, speaking of peace on earth, what would it take to transition out of weapons and into renewable energy? It takes a few hours and one drug test to convince Pepper he's serious, and she leaves with the promise to schedule meetings with the directors of local nonprofits over the next couple weeks. Tony sleeps through the night, dreaming of Steve's wide grin when he finally got a close look at the Stark family Christmas tree. There's a ripple, just like Pepper said there would be. Stock prices sink, then skyrocket, shattering all previous records for Stark Industries. The weeks after Christmas, Tony packs his days with visiting nonprofits, touring offices and facilities, and ending each visit by quietly handing over a folded-up check to bewildered directors and public outreach coordinators. The first few times, he left before they opened the check. After Pepper fielded several panicked phone calls asking if Mr. Stark was sure he wrote the amount correctly, Tony stayed behind to make those assurances himself. On New Year's Eve, Rhodey emerges from whatever mission he's been on. "Heard the big news. Proud of you, man," he texts Tony. "Thanks, Rhodey Bear. You planning to show your face in New York anytime soon? Or am I going to have to go without my New Year's kiss?" "You're hilarious. If everything goes well here, I'll be there in February." There's a pause, then another message. "Look, no pressure on this, but if you're looking to spread around more of that wealth, I know someone who could use some help. Runs an art therapy group for veterans, but wants to expand it outside the VA. Send me his name." A couple hours later, Tony is on the phone with Sam Wilson. It takes some convincing for Sam to believe that, yes, he's Tony Stark. Yes, that Tony Stark. And he wants to give money to Sam's newly registered nonprofit, no strings attached. When Sam finally agrees to a meeting, he tells Tony his timing is perfect. The program director is in Brooklyn through the end of the week. Which is how, on January 6th, the spirit of Christmas past walks into Tony's office, holds out a hand, and introduces himself as Steve Rogers. Tony takes the offered hand. "Tony Stark," he manages. Steve's smile flickers from professional to amused. "Nice to meet you, Mr. Stark." "Tony," Tony insists. "Tony," Steve agrees. The air seems to crackle between them. After a few moments, Steve seems to realize he's still holding Tony's hand and releases it, ducking his head, but not before Tony sees he's blushing. Tony sits down, motioning for Steve to do the same. "Sam told me you're interested in investing in our organization," Steve says quickly. "To be honest with you, Mr. Tony, we were surprised you'd heard of us." "Mutual friend," Tony replies. "Jim Rhodes?" "Oh," Steve says, relaxing. "How is Jim?" "Busy," Tony says, "I assume. Doing something top secret and probably dangerous." "Yes," Steve says with an edge of something in his voice. "I'm familiar." "I'll be honest with you, Steve, I don't have a lot of friends. Not real ones, anyway, who'd still be around if all of this," he waves around at the enormous office, filled with fine art Pepper curated, "went away. Rhodey is one of those real friends. I've certainly put him through enough bullshit to test that loyalty. If he tells me the work you're doing is important and I should throw some money at it," Tony shrugs, "I'm not going to argue." "That's quite the endorsement," Steve says wryly. Tony shrugs again. "I'm not good for much else." "I doubt that. You've only just met me." "I..." Steve stops. He takes a breath and says carefully, "You're right, but I think there's more to you than money." "Hardly anyone's that simple, especially not someone who's altered the course of his life in a few weeks." "Are you coming on to me?" Tony asks, humor in his tone. "Not during a business meeting." "And outside of one?" Steve shrugs one shoulder. "Guess we'll find out." Tony stands up and offers his hand. "Good to meet you, Steve. I'll be in touch." "Thank you, Tony. And likewise." "So that's business settled. How do you feel about a walk? There's a shawarma place nearby. I don't know what it is, but I'd like to try it. What do you say? Just lunch between two casual acquaintances. No shop talk." Steve laughs and agrees. After lunch, they walk down a few neighborhood streets, enjoying each other's company. Tony is feeling warm from lunch and Steve's genuine interest in Tony's engineering projects. He doesn't have the background Tony does, but Steve's a natural with understanding how things work. The mutual pull between the two of them doesn't seem to have faded. Feeling bold, Tony asks, "You said there was more to me than money. What makes you so sure I changed my life because I wanted to, and not because of, say, the rumors that I have a brain tumor?" Steve tips his head with an amused, self-conscious smile. "Would you believe I had a dream about you?" He laughs, cheeks flushed with cold and embarrassment. "I was taking you through your past, just like in A Christmas Carol. That's what I get for falling asleep watching the Muppet version on Christmas Eve. I had that dream." Steve stops walking and turns to him. "Be serious." "I am serious." "Well, that's quite the coincidence. And you just happen to be in town to meet with me on 12th night?" Steve still looks doubtful. "Life could be pretty strange, Tony." "Okay, well, forget the spiritual intervention then. I like you. I'd like to kiss you right here, if you'll let me. Not to mention a series of other activities I'd like to do with you that are not appropriate in public, but we can negotiate those later." Tony smooths his hands down the lapels of Steve's wool coat. He can see the rapid movement of Steve's breath in the winter air. "No hard feelings if you say no. No hard feelings if it doesn't work out. I already locked in Stark Industries' recurring charitable donation through Pepper before we finished lunch. She now has sole control over the charitable giving structures." Steve looks down at him. "I'm not like anyone else you've dated." Tony winds his hands in the ends of Steve's scarf and tugs gently. "That's rather the point, darling," he murmurs. "We'll need to come up with a story of how we met," Steve breathes against the corner of Tony's mouth. "We can just say I had an epiphany," Tony replies. Steve is still laughing when Tony kisses him. The end.